Good day, fellow hoteliers, and welcome to episode 255 of the Hotel Marketing Podcast. I got a question for you. Do you ever feel or just wonder how hotels can compete against the changing and ever-evolving world of vacation rental space? Are you at a loss for how your property can succeed in a market with amazing Airbnbs and VRBOs and everything like that? Well, guess what? You're at the Hotel Marketing Podcast, and you've come to the right place because that's exactly what we're going to be talking about today. But we can't do that without kicking the show off, which we're going to do right now. All right. So now that we got that intro out of the way, we're ready to kick off the show. But before we begin, if you want to follow along, we have the show notes and everything else at travelboommarketing.com/podcast. And just use your thumb or your finger or wherever you're using to click and click on episode 255. That's going to have all the links and everything that you need to kind of follow along. But what it also is going to have is a link to the brand new 2024 Hotelier Sentiment Study, which we just launched last week. And so far, we've got a lot of great reviews and feedback on the study that digs into what hoteliers are seeing around the country and what we can learn from that. What we also did is we took that data, compared it to our leisure travel trends study, which came out recently as well, and tried to find the places where hoteliers and the vacationers were in sync, and then also areas where maybe a hotelier was missing a point or two that a vacationer finds very important. So travelboommarketing.com/podcast, that'll get all the information that you need to be a best hotelier you can be. With that housekeeping out of the way, let's go ahead and check in with the cast. The first one we have today is Olivia. How's it going over there?
It's going pretty well over here, Pete.
Nice. So we got Alyssa as well. Hello. And Jeremy.
Howdy.
So guess what? So by the time this episode drops, Easter will be over. So it's going to drop, I guess, April 2nd is the day that this episode will hit the world. So here's a question for you in the future. Did you have a good Easter?
It was the best Easter I've ever had.
That's awesome.
I also had the best Easter ever.
Congratulations. I'm so happy to hear that.
I hope you also had a great Easter, Pete.
Yeah, it was going to have been the best time I've ever had, or will have. When you guys do, and I know Jeremy and Alyssa, you guys have kids, Easter baskets, do they include a gift, or are Easter baskets purely a confectionery surprise?
So there are actually very minimal treats in the Easter basket. And I feel like the Easter basket turned into something way larger than I wanted it to turn into this year. And I'm going to call out my mom. She's not a listener, so she can't hear me talking shit. But she always like outdoes us. So for Christmas, and I appreciate everything, right? Like Nana's meant to spoil her children just in case this, or grandchildren just in case this does get back to her. But she got the kids more than Santa did. And then for Easter, she got the kids more than I did. The Easter bunny, duh. And so I went and got like some summer clothes, which they needed anyway, bathing suits, water shoes, stuff that I would have had to buy, but like toddlers just go wild for that stuff. So,
yep.
And then I got like bunny goldfish instead of goldfish and bunny crackers and a couple things. No candy though, some like slime and putty and like cheap stuff, but like the basket then just kept growing with clothes and shoes. So now I'm like setting myself up for the future to have to outdo it.
Yeah, you got to stop. You can't do that. Because the reason I asked the question is because Kim wanted to get, the girls need a new curling iron. And it's like a nice, like yep, a $100 curling iron, but it was on sale for $50. And I'm like, you can't put that in the Easter basket because it screws everything up moving forward.
To be fair, you know, they aren't going to get many more Easter baskets.
True, but that doesn't need to be in an Easter basket. I feel like if you need to get that for them, you know, there's other reasons.
What are the reasons?
But I feel like, I mean, it could be
nobody's birthday's coming up, right?
Nobody's birthday's coming up, but the semester just ended, so they both got good grades.
They know the Easter bunny is not real, so I'm not understanding the argument against the curling iron here. Just get them the curling iron.
It's the point of it. It's like Easter's not a...
It's not a gift-giving holiday.
Yeah, no, it's not a materialistic holiday in that sense. It's like you get some candy and it's fun and that's kind of it. And I'm afraid if you start turning that into that,
then... Sounds like Pete had some disappointing Easters growing up.
Yeah, I've had the same Easter basket. Pete
never got a curling iron for Easter.
Yeah, I never got a curling iron.
I've had the same Easter basket since my first Easter, and I am almost 30. So the Easter basket has never grown in size.
Nana actually just reused my childhood Easter basket for my daughter.
That is so sweet.
That's good stuff. That's like the tradition and everything from it.
Yeah, and it's all candy. All candy over here, too. All sweets, all stupid, disgusting candy that you don't need to be consuming more than once a year.
Yeah.
What
about you, Jeremy?
Well, I was going to ask, when you go see the Easter Bunny at the mall, what do you talk about with the Easter Bunny?
Nothing.
I've never gone to see an Easter Bunny at the mall.
I wouldn't say a word to that thing. I wouldn't even
everybody's
get near
scared
it.
Of the Easter Bunny. Yeah, everybody's scared of the Easter Bunny. Nobody likes that creature.
So I feel like mall bunnies are not a thing anymore. Are they still a thing? Like, malls are barely a thing.
Well, it doesn't have to be mall. I just meant... Well, if you ever go with a photo op with an Easter Bunny.
So we just did this.
You always have small talk with Santa, but I mean, what do you say to the Easter
Bunny? Benny was like, please don't eat me. He freaked out. It was horrible. He hated every moment of the Easter Bunny.
Yeah, it's a human-sized animal. It's scary.
And usually the contests are kind of shitty. You know, it doesn't look like, oh, that looks like what a bunny looks like. It's like, that's what a scary person wearing a bunny costume looks like.
It is very obviously something looking like something else. And I think a lot of kids catch that vibe. And I do too.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the uncanny valley of mythical creatures.
Yeah, both eyes facing front. That's a predator. I don't think so. I don't think so.
That's right, everybody. The Easter Bunny is a predator. Keep your kids away. Oh, that's funny. So, well, cool. So I think we all know how we stand on Easter. You guys, we got a couple cool news items before we jump into the main topic. So let's go ahead and do some news. So the news items for today, we got two of them. The first one is what I'm calling OTAs making it rain. So this article that comes to us from FocusWire, they decided to not name it something cool. They named it Online Travel Giants Set New Record Marketing Spend in 23. So more or less what this article is saying is the spend when you combine Expedia, Booking, Airbnb, Trip.com, the whole group of OTAs and vacation, I guess, mega companies spent $16.8 billion on marketing last year, which was 20% up from 2022. The point of the article is that we're seeing that trend continue, and all of the major companies are really dumping a ton of money into their marketing effort, both in CPC programs on search engines, traditional TV and other outreach type campaigns. And it's pretty interesting as well. So one of the things that they talk about with Airbnb is they're spending a lot of their money on what they call education, which means obviously, you know, informing the traveler of why a Airbnb VRBO type vacation rental property makes a lot of sense, but also creating fun ways where they can get that press and social credibility from their efforts as well. So, you know, one of the big things that they talked about was how Airbnb partnered with Mattel and they can let you stay in the Malibu Barbie dream house as a vacation, which for me is worse than staying with the Easter Bunny, but for a lot of people that would be fantastic. So I thought this was a really cool article. I don't know if you guys had a chance to read it or have any thoughts, but I feel like it does tie into the question today of how can hotels compete against Airbnbs? What's the other news item we have?
I don't know how I can tie. Here we go. Okay. Speaking of sweet treats and things that you can eat in an Easter basket. The Leela Palace Hotel in New Delhi, India, has really exemplified the saying, surprise and delight your guests, by handling a lost luggage situation with an airline for a guest. So this guest had their luggage lost by an airline, and the hotel went absolutely above and beyond for her to get her luggage back. Not only did they handle communications with the airline as far as finding the bag, they got the bag to the hotel. When this guest returned to her hotel after she'd done whatever she was doing for the day, not only did she find her suitcase alive and well with everything she needed in it, she found a suitcase-shaped cake in her room that looked just like her suitcase, and it had the words, "I'm back," written on it in fondant. It looks like there's also some, did I say macarons or macaroons? I feel like I might get crucified. There's a couple of those on there. It's very cute.
That's such a Merlinish way to say macarons.
Macarons, macaroons.
wait a minute. Do you say macaroon? Macarons?
Let's ask. Can you ask? Let's ask AI to pronounce it for us.
Oh yeah. Who can we ask?
Like, what is the French way to say that?
Oh, the French way. I would sound silly with this kind of accent randomly dropping. randomly dropping a perfectly pronounced French word into my vernacular. Anyways, there are three macaroons on the plate with the suitcase-shaped cake. That is very sweet. It's an opportunity for that hotel. I'm not sure if they have a partnership with a local bakery or how they executed this. It also looks like, from the photo, which I guess we'll put in the show notes, it looks like there's a handwritten note back there behind the cake. You know, even though this wasn't, obviously, the airline losing her luggage wasn't their fault, they definitely stepped up and made lemonade out of lemons with that one. Mm-hmm. And she's a content creator, a social content creator with a travel focus. So she has a huge following of folks who want to see this kind of thing. And I'm certain that the Leela Palace is grabbing some good press off of this. They also, I mean, that's a ton of good engagement for Chloe Caldwell is the name of the influencer. That's a ton of good engagement for her and for the palace as well. So that's amazing. Amazing customer service there.
It really is. I mean, I remember years ago on the podcast, we talked about Joshy the giraffe and how Joshy was just a little stuffed animal of a kid, and the kid left it at the hotel. So the parents obviously called the hotel. It was a Ritz-Carlton property. And obviously they found the giraffe, but instead of sending it right back, they had the giraffe take a vacation at the property. And the giraffe went to the spa and had like the cucumbers on its eyes. And this, it went to the pool. It did all this kind of fun stuff. And, you know, it was a huge hit for the family. It did really well from a social perspective.
I was going to say, as a social guy, like gold mine.
Right? Yeah.
So, gold mine.
Yeah, I feel like the Leela Hotels did the exact same thing. And it's pretty impressive looking cake. So
it is. It's cute. If you check out the show
notes, we got a picture of the, I guess it was on Instagram. Mm-hmm.
I'd love to see her suitcase and see really how close it looks. Right, exactly. How close it looks to her luggage. I mean, the possibility for partnerships just within that one photo are absolutely insane. That bakery, yeah, with, you know, the airlines, all that crazy. Mm-hmm.
So this is actually a perfect tie-in, because we're going to move from the news over to the article. And we talked about things that hotels can do that can differentiate them from like an Airbnb or VRBO. If you were staying at an Airbnb or VRBO, and we're not trashing them by any means, I stay at them myself, but if you lose your luggage and you're staying at an Airbnb, good luck. You know, you don't have an advocate in the market to help you. You know, in this case, you have a property who literally, like you said, they bent over backwards, communicated with the hotel when they didn't have to, drove to the airport to get the bag when they didn't have to, made the people a freaking cake when they didn't have to. And they did all this while those people were enjoying their vacation.
Right.
That is a huge differentiator that I don't see any type of vacation rental property ever being able to even get close to offering that level of service.
They're not there is the thing. Yep. You have someone at your hotel on site, and that is their job. Airbnb, yep, you're texting someone who might be in the main house, you know, up in the yard, or who mm-hmm. might not even live in the country. And they'll say, oh, sorry, that sucks. There's a Target not too far away if you want to call an Uber and go grab yourself some fresh underwear. But
and honestly, that would be helpful if that's what they were able to do. And I think what you said is they're not there. You know, so for a hotel, you have someone who's there. And as an innkeeper, I think that's all you can do is make sure that you're there and help that guest have a great experience.
And even if they are there, like, let's be honest, I'm not getting in some Airbnb owner's car for him to take me back to the airport and then home again. Like, that's just weird, you know?
That sounds scary. Yeah. When you say it like
but the random dude that you find on Uber.
A psycho thriller.
Yeah, the random guy on Uber, at least I know what his name is.
Yeah.
Someone is registered within that vehicle and someone on the app knows about it.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think this is an amazing story. And I think it's one of those things that if you're a hotelier, you can't predict when someone's going to lose their luggage, but for your property, it may be they lost their glasses. Something happened and it gives you a chance to say, okay, I'm going to differentiate myself. And guess what? You don't know it yet, but you just became a guest of ours for life. And you're going to tell everybody about this amazing experience. And that's kind of all you can do. Yeah, let's go ahead and jump to the main topics. So we've already figured out that we know people when they're going on vacation, the first thing they do is they're going to pick a destination 99% of the time. They know where they're going. And at this point, they really have two real definitive ways of visiting that destination. One is the traditional hotel route where they're going to look at your property. They may go to a OTA, but one way or another, they're getting down that traditional vacation path. The other one, which is very popular for people, business and leisure, is to go Airbnb and VRBO. Offer a lot more space, different amenities. You have more privacy in some cases if it's a whole house. So there's a lot of different benefits to it. But the question becomes is what can a hotelier do to make sure that they're exemplifying all the value that a hotel can deliver while also covering the things that VRBOs and Airbnbs and vacation properties typically have succeeded at. So Olivia, you put a ton of effort into this really good article called How Does Airbnb Compete with Hotels? And tell us a little bit about this and tell us what we're going to be talking about today.
So, I mean, we all know, like Pete just gave us a great introduction, that Airbnb versus hotels, it's a huge, huge debate. You pretty much can't talk about one without mentioning the other, right? So there are, you know, only so many things that we can do when you look at the differences between the possibilities for offerings. But essentially, it's going to come down to budget, it's going to come down to the needs of your travelers, and it's going to come down to their personal preferences. So with that, we've got a couple of different ways that you guys can compete with Airbnbs. We are going to talk about price, cost of stay. We're going to get into on-site amenities, the flexibility that hotels and Airbnbs can offer, and we're also going to look into partnerships. So with that, our first section, we're going to move over to Jeremy, and he's going to kick us off this discussion with price and cost of stay, and we'll get into a good chat about it.
Yeah, so one of the big things I think that comes up when we're talking about Airbnb versus hotels is the price or the cost of the stay. No, I think it depends on the accommodation you're selecting in terms of the Airbnb, where I think a lot of times Airbnb may end up being less expensive. Obviously, like I mentioned, it's going to depend on how large the Airbnb you're staying at and whether you may be splitting that bill up again with more than one person. But there are obviously there's going to be ways where hotels can combat that, where prices may be a little bit lower at an Airbnb, and hotels can accommodate and match that with things like immediate gratification through savings or credits, tailoring special packages to things like local festivals or shows or conferences that are happening in the area. So generating new packages or things that are specific to those types of events. Other ideas are encouraging guests to stay longer by offering discounts for more nights spent, and then increasing midweek occupancy by offering deep discounts or convincing deals to increase your midweek occupancy. And then I would even also add to that is I think this is a big thing where loyalty programs can come in, where you get that guest, where you can offer them, you know, something upfront, you know, right away with like a special deal or maybe some, or maybe rewards points to something immediate when they get on the property. But then you essentially have them, you have their email, you have their information, you essentially potentially have a guest for life by including them in that loyalty program, which is something that just Airbnbs can't, or an Airbnb cannot combat with.
Yeah, and I would add to that too, Jeremy, from a hotel management perspective, like rate management and manipulation is, you know, a career in some cases for people, whereas Airbnb, I don't want to overgeneralize, but most people own an Airbnb. They're either living there, renting it out, and that is not their, you know, career path or expertise. So I think hotels definitely have a leg up on Airbnb when it comes to cost, unless, like you said, you're splitting it, you know, 10 ways.
But then you have to be in a house with 9 other people.
True.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, honestly, and that is, to be frank, that is one of the benefits to like a VRBO or vacation rental type property. Once a year, we do a little vacation with my sister and her family and my brother and his family. So that vacation rental is the ideal solution because we all have our own bedrooms, it's own space, but we also have that shared space where we can do stuff together. But that doesn't really work for everybody. And it does get relatively expensive if you don't divide the cost by a lot of people. And you can never stay at one for a night. You know, if you're going to do any type of vacation rental, you better plan on several nights stay. And I think that's one of the big things that hotels can do is they can offer you the flexibility, like you said, to, you know, I'm gonna stay here for a couple nights. And if I want to stay, I can just go back in and continue my stay and extend my visit. With a Airbnb, it's going to be a lot farther out planning. Typically, it's going to be a longer length of stay, and you don't have that flexibility from a date range or a price range perspective.
They're waiting for you on the porch, getting in there to clean when you leave. Those turnovers are quick with an Airbnb, you know. So
that's one of the things I don't know if it might be on the list. I haven't gone through everything yet, but you know, the cleaning, when you don't leave a hotel, you don't have to worry about, oh, Mo, let's start the dishwasher, do this.
Yeah.
It's a nice and easy experience.
Having to find out where the trash can is outside of an Airbnb is one of my least favorite parts of the Airbnb, having to go poking around some houses backyard area to find where the trash is.
Yeah. And it's never mowed, so you're going through like deep grass usually. So. Well, so that kind of brings me into my section here.
He covered everyone's sections in 2 minutes.
He's an amazing summary creator. Yeah. He could rival AI. You give Pete an entire podcast and he's like, actually, I got this. Here's what we're going to do.
Yeah, I was going to say, Pete, there's going to be a Pete AI.
Pete is a section thief.
So listeners can't see this, but you were taking a big drink. So I was trying to cover for you.
Thanks so much, Pete.
You're welcome. All right. So let's try this all over again. And I'm going to keep my mouth shut. And you tell
me. I loved it. I don't even remember where we ended off with Jeremy speaking, but that I don't even know that it was Jeremy speaking last. It was probably Pete.
I don't know. Anyway. Because my job is to talk about the on-site amenities.
Yes.
And trash cans are a nice amenity that is taken care of for you at a hotel. So that was more or less what I think, you know, my point kind of goes into. But it's, you know, if you're a hotelier, a lot of the amenities that you have cannot be duplicated by a vacation rental. The one caveat to that being if it's a condominiumized property and, you know, the property is actually at another resort, then there's a little bit of a difference there. But in most cases, if you're a hotel, you have a water slide, you have a lazy river, you have a dining, a restaurant, things like that. Those are all things that really can't compete or can't be beaten by a vacation rental property. So lean into those. Make sure people understand all the amazing amenities that you have. And that does go beyond just the, you know, we have, you know, a restaurant or pool complex, whatever it might be. It's those little things that we were just talking about before. We have that concierge that's going to help you find your bag. We have the person who's going to be, like Olivia said, there. They're going to be there for you. And that might be taking the trash out. It might be maid service, housekeeping, room service, whatever it might be. There's so many conveniences that are part of the hotel experience that really can't be emulated very well on the vacation rental side. So I would think you'd want to lean into that. If you can do that, you really do. You're not competing against them on a level playing field. You're creating a playing field that is your place, your space to own the guest.
So speaking of amenities, one of the bigger amenities that you won't find in a rental that you definitely will find in a hotel is the peace of mind. I have actually slept on the porch of an Airbnb, a rental, because...
Wait, what? You slept on a porch?
Yep, I slept on the porch. I slept on the porch. We were having just the best time and we extended our trip, which doesn't everyone love when your guest extends their trip? He was so excited. He was like, I'm glad you guys are having a great time. Can't wait to have you for another night. And he did not extend our door code. So we arrived back at the Airbnb at like 3 o'clock in the morning, phone's dying, morale is low. We're thinking about putting some pizza rolls in the oven while we shower. That's the plan. And the door code doesn't work anymore. Obviously, we call this guy. We text him, do everything we can. And eventually we're like, well, we're sleeping on the porch. And we slept on the porch until he woke up around 5:30 and came and let us in. He comped the night, but we slept on the porch. We slept outside.
Yeah, and you're still an Airbnb girl after all that.
I am still an Airbnb girl. I hate to say it. I hate to say it. But maybe, when I'm not so, young and, because being older, sleeping on the porch would have destroyed me, but I still have some of those leftover skills from college where I can sleep anywhere, anytime, for any reason. And I slept great out there on that porch.
And I guess it's like, that's kind of like the adventure of, I don't want to say the adventure of the Airbnbs, you don't get to stay in it, but it's like, you have to be a little bit more flexible. You have to understand things are going to be a little bit different, but you do experience a whole different way of travel. Which I think one of the, like you said, the value is a peace of mind with hotels is that there's a consistency. You know what you're going to get, and it's all going to be basically the same experience from property to property to property with some nuances in between.
Exactly. And if you're finding something in your experience that you don't love, you can go to the front desk. There is someone there. I know we've brought that up a couple of times already, but there is someone there. It is someone's whole job. It is a full-time job that your stay is awesome. And, in converse, like your rental owner's day job is probably something that benefits from a second income stream, which is what rentals are to a lot of rental owners, is an income stream. Whereas guest experience is an entire job at a lot of hotel properties. Hoteling is a job for hoteliers, whereas your Airbnb host or your rental host's job is probably teaching or an artist or something else that, requires a second income stream.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, you when you're at a hotel, you do have the ability to always, go downstairs and ask for help. And I think that's one of the things that, hotels... When you're competing against other hotels, that's not a point of differentiation. But when you are competing against the vacation rental space, lean into that a little bit. Some people, there's a reason that some people like to go to the hole-in-the-wall Italian place that probably has better food versus Olive Garden, which is the same, experience that you get at anyone you go to in the whole world. So, knowing that you do offer a consistent experience and it's going to be consistently good, lean into that and make sure people know that, hey, this is a little bit easier of a stay and you get what you expect.
Absolutely. I think the Italian restaurant is a really good, analogy for that, where it's like Olive Garden versus somewhere that's called like Mama Lucia's or something. And there's like 6 parking spots out front and you got to fight for a parking spot. That's might be the better spot, but the consistency is something that you just can't, you can't beat that. You can show up anywhere in the world at one of these, you know, at a national hotel brand, and you know what you're getting. You know your hotel brands. You might even have your favorite hotel brands. You know what to expect. They've got brand standards. They have, you know, national guidelines. And generally, I would say at a, you know, at a town level, at a county level, at a state level, or hotels follow more rules than rental owners just because of the scale of their operations versus like the single family dwellings that you would find as a, you know, looking for rentals.
Yeah. And, you know, I think one of the things on there as well that you kind of hit on the notes was the cancellation policies. I think that's true. A big thing as well.
Yeah. You know, within, for a hotel within, let's say probably about 24 to 48 hours, you're able to get a full refund. So, you know, whether your travel plans change and you don't need to be there that night or you need to be there the next night, maybe your flight got delayed, you need to change something there, you've got a full refund waiting for you most likely. Whereas, mm-hmm. you know, renting a space through an app or a rental, you have a much smaller window and it's way more likely that you're not getting a full refund because, again, these are smaller operations and they can't afford to give you a full refund, mayhaps. The hotel scale just gives them more room to play. It gives them more room to give you more room to play, honestly. They've got that, you know, those brand guidelines and those national guidelines to follow that kind of do keep them operating within a, I won't say a margin of error, but a margin of flexibility.
It's an expectation, right? I mean, that's kind of the way the hotel space has worked for forever. And with your vacation rental, when you have one unit, you either have 100% occupancy or 0%. And that's a big difference for the vacation rental space. But, you know, I think it's like kind of like what you said before is it's a different product. So understanding that as a hotelier that, you know, vacation rentals are a great option for guests, but it doesn't make sense for all cases. And if you can lead in on peace of mind, that is fantastic. And you kind of mentioned a consistency as well. I think that was, you know, a big thing that we talked about. So, you know, one of the examples you have is like the DoubleTree cookies, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're knowing that.
If you show up in Georgia, if you're in Connecticut, if you're in one of those scary landlocked states in the middle of the United States, the DoubleTree Hotel has cookies for you when you arrive to check in. And, you know, that's just a surface level example, but those delicious cookies can sometimes, you know, if you've had a long travel day, sometimes something that can get you through is just knowing, you know, that there's going to be a light on for you. There's going to be someone awake at the front desk waiting for you to help you check in. You know, a lot of Airbnbs and rentals and like that, they don't even have luggage racks. You're carrying your luggage. They don't even have a cart for you. But, you know, when you choose a hotel, you've got those little amenities that they can afford to do that Airbnbs just don't have the wiggle room for.
Yep. Nice. Yeah, I think that's a good one between peace of mind and consistency. So so what's next on our agenda here?
So next on our agenda, we are looking at kind of expanding your search for strategy out into your community. So we have got Alyssa here with us to talk us through some strategy involving working with other local businesses and forming some partnerships to kind of benefit both parties. So take it away, Alyssa.
Yeah, I think partnerships is a very clear advantage on the hotel front. You know, obviously you check into an Airbnb, there may or may not be some information there about the area. But like we keep reiterating, it's a single person or property manager that doesn't necessarily have the opportunity to partner with local businesses because it's such a small scale. So hotels can form these partnerships with local businesses in a variety of ways, and they're going to enhance the guest experience and promote local economic growth. So two huge benefits from a hotel side. So we put together some ideas that hotels can, you know, compete against Airbnbs through these partnerships with whether you're small property or large property, you know, you should be at least considering some of these. So local dining, local tourism and attractions, local entertainment, these kind of all fall within the same category, in my opinion. You know, you can collaborate with these nearby restaurants, nearby attractions, museums, nearby theaters, concert halls, comedy clubs, whatever it might be, to offer, you know, first and foremost, exclusive discounts to those partners or locations. That could be vouchers or coupons or actual tickets, so you don't have to go buy them yourself. But in addition to that, and we've kind of hit on this a lot already, so I won't spend too much time on it, but arranging it for the guests. So the way that this hotel went and got this missing bag so that the guest didn't have to deal with it, planning you know, a dinner reservation or finding an attraction or a theater, it may not seem like a big deal, but it, you know, these small ways that hotels can compete can make a difference at the end of the day. So it's relieving some pressure off of the guest from a planning perspective. So just going the extra mile. And transportation partnerships. So very similarly, collaborating with local transportation companies and services, taxis, car rentals, bike share programs, having bikes on property that, you know, maybe the bikes are Pedagos and you have a Pedago store in town that you can like cross promote so that your guests can benefit from that. These programs and partnerships are going to help your guests to, you know, feel safe traveling, especially if they're going out to a restaurant and drinking and coming back. And again, it's a level of convenience that a hotel can offer and an Airbnb cannot.
Yeah, I mean, to an extent, right? I mean, in some cases, I think this is one hotelier should jump on this to solidify their relationship with a lot of those partners. Because I think, you know, in some cases, you know, you may have a good vacation rental provider who does have a lot of those great things. They have a cool book. They, you know, let you know where you need to go, where you not, don't need to go, things like that. But in a lot of times, if you just walk in and you're blind, I think that makes it very difficult to enjoy your vacation. So, you know, hoteliers need to lean in that we have these partnerships in telling people that before they arrive, you know, as an amenity, you know, on your amenity section of your site, you obviously have, you know, water park, you have dining, you have, you know, the area. It should be, you know, also local flavor, and it talks about all the fun stuff that you do to make it easy for that guest. So you have this amenity that you can do a good job marketing proactively, whereas it might just be a something that the guest discovers when they visit a vacation rental property.
Yeah, you can go as far with that as creating itineraries. I know we've had a couple of clients who create like your perfect bachelorette weekend in Pensacola Beach, or, you know, your like what to do in Pensacola when it rains or something like that, where you can just take all of those awesome partnerships and kind of compile them and use that to work to both of your advantages and also to your guests, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. I, for one, think the Airbnb book, quote unquote, is gross. Everyone touches it. It's never helpful. I do flip through it, but it's never, you know, provided me with any knowledge that I didn't already have. So I think hotels have the upper hand here.
I feel like too that a lot of these partnerships, it very leans into like the experiential traveler, which is gaining like been around, like it's obviously not like totally new, but I mean, I feel like it's something that's, it's a buzzword that's definitely been gaining traction, which, and I feel like the experiential traveler is something that Airbnb really likes to target. They like, they want you to feel like you're staying here and you're living like a local and this is what you need to do and stuff. And I feel like that was some great points in terms of feeling more safe about the types of places that you're visiting. If you're a hotel and you're making these official partnerships with some of these businesses, these are obviously very authorized. And I mean, you would assume if you're partnering with safe businesses where the experiential traveler would actually be able to go and have a good time at and not have to second guess or guess what is actually going to be a nice experience or not.
Yeah. You know, all of the conveniences of an Airbnb are kind of washed away when you get there and have to do like literally all of the planning yourself. So from a partnership perspective, they're not going to offer the discounts. They're going to, you know, they're not going to have a reliable transportation service that comes to pick you up, that isn't going to kidnap you and drive you away. Not Joe Schmo's taxis that's listed in the book that may or may not be in business any longer. But yeah, and so taking a step further for partnerships, and getting away from, you know, like area things to do, showcasing local products is also a really great way to promote that economic growth and maybe even, you know, score a discount for your own property. So showcasing locally made products in the hotel's gift shop, or purchasing them at a discount and using them as your on-site amenities. You're shopping small and supporting your community. It can include outside of amenities, artisanal foods, crafts, beauty products, whatever it might be that's sourced from your local businesses. And taking that even one step further, spa and wellness partnerships. If you don't have a spa on site or some type of wellness facility on site, you can partner with these local spas or studios or wellness centers to offer packages and discounts for guests that are seeking these services. Now, I did have in here a note about potentially partnering with local spas or studios to have professionals come into your property if you don't have these facilities on site, like in-room massages. But then I took it out and I wanted to get your opinion. Like, is that weird? Like, is that
No, there's a couple properties that I know that do
is
that.
Is it a liability? Cool. Like, for weird things happening inside the room?
Well, I reckon with a partnership, if it's, you know, like an official corporate level partnership, yeah, that there would be safeguards against that for the masseur. Yeah.
And I know there's a couple properties that we work with that don't have a spa on property, but what they have is an unused meeting room that they've kind of turned into the spa room. And like, if you make a reservation, they pick up the phone, call the local spa person, and then they just have, basically it's a like
freelance, you know, massage.
They call it at home appointment that they go to the hotel, they get the spa room all set up for
nice.
It. There's a lot of opportunities.
Yeah,
like that,
for sure.
That's really cool.
Separately, corporate partnerships. We have, you know, quite a few clients that their target audience is a corporate traveler, and corporate travel has been really bouncing back post pandemic. We see the data day in and day out. So establishing partnerships with local businesses for corporate events, meetings, conferences, you may or may not have meeting space on site. So take that a step further and see how you can use it to your advantage, these partnerships. And you can offer special rates or packages for business travelers. That's a pretty obvious one. But you can also arrange meeting spaces or catering services for these corporate travelers that are visiting your property.
That's a nice one.
Yeah. This one we've kind of hit on a ton, local experiences concierge. Making sure you have someone on site that can help. You know, putting this on the front desk employee isn't going to provide the same experience as employing a dedicated concierge, you know, employee, for lack of a better word. So creating a section on the hotel's website, you guys just mentioned that, recommending local experiences, activities, dining options. You can use your blog for this. You can do a visitor guide. You can have paper printouts. You can have signage on site. You can have a person that asks everyone at check-in, do you have plans? Do you need plans? Can I help you? There's our concierge desk over there. He will plan it for you. If you've ever been to an all-inclusive resort, whether it's Mexico, Dominican Republic, whatever, they have this, and it's so fantastic because you don't have to do anything. From the time you arrive, you can say, okay, I want to go climb a waterfall. I want to go ride kayaks. I want to do this. They set it up for you. They tell you where to go, how much it costs, and what time to show up. And it's just so seamless that it takes all of the stress away from the guest. So, you know, maybe you can't offer that level of service, but having someone that knows the area and can help actually facilitate these things is key. You know, not just making suggestions, because what's the point? Like, the a printed out visitor guide or an Airbnb book is going to do that. But having someone that can facilitate the dinner reservation or the car pickup, whatever it is really the competitive advantage here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And even if, you know, the funny thing with a lot of amenities is, you know, we see, you know, in our recent travel trend study for leisure travelers, you see a lot of amenities that rank highly for what travelers want or benefits that they don't actually use. You know, the fitness center is a great example. It's like, okay, everyone says, oh, I want to have a fitness center. It's like, really? Because did you go to one while you're our last vacation?
When is the last time you've ever used a fitness center in a hotel? Ever.
Never in my life.
Never. I don't think I have.
Lock it in. I don't
see, I do because they have like nice treadmills.
That is just the weirdest
thing. I'm walking if I'm on vacation.
I'm excited about
I'll get my steps in.
Yeah, because you said they're like really cool treadmills and like Pelotons, and I don't have that stuff at home. So I'm like, oh, sweet. I'm going to go use a treadmill.
See, maybe the Peloton, maybe, because of the classes and the interactivity of it. But a treadmill, come on.
The precursor to being the grandpa that's waking people up at 4 a.m. making coffee is being Pete, who's waking up his family because he's trying to leave to go run on the treadmill.
Pete's knees are going to buckle underneath
his body. Excuse me, guys. I'm just lacing up my running shoes.
Because he runs on a treadmill.
I'm sorry that I am trying to stay healthy.
Oh, please. It's vacation. There's no health on vacation. You're health unless because you're happy.
A wellness trip.
Yeah. Oh, please.
Yeah, there you go.
Wellness travel.
All trips are wellness.
But wrapping all of this up, you know, partnerships between businesses and hotels can benefit from co-marketing campaigns. So, you know, you're collaborating with these businesses on joint marketing campaigns and you're promoting your hotel and the partner business. So maybe this works on, you know, a larger scale of you have an event like Myrtle Beach has CCMF every year. Maybe you partner to offer discounted rates to get more attendees to buy CCMF tickets, but then CCMF says, okay, hey, you're going to be our featured hotel partner so we can put more of our attendees in your hotel. It's a win-win. So cross-promoting the partnerships and efforts through social media, email, whatever it might be, is a competitive advantage for hotels. And the last one I had from a partnership perspective was community engagement. You're really bolstering your brand's identity, participating in community events and initiatives to support these local businesses and organizations. So really, your reputation and word of mouth advertising, you know, your entire business model obviously can't support on that or can't be supported by that alone, but sponsoring local festivals, charity events, celebrations, whatever it might be, put yourself out there and be a part of your community so that people think of you when they're recommending a place to stay. But that's all I had. So, you know, these partnerships really can offer unique experiences to guests. So when you consider from a 10,000 foot view, the stay of an Airbnb and the stay of a hotel, this is one way that hotels can really home in on this competitive advantage, and it's a way that they can make themselves stand out and potentially even make someone choose a hotel over an Airbnb.
Completely.
Nice. So do we have time, Pete, for that final one to click the bonus?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's hear what you have, and then we'll wrap up the show.
All right. So on the topic sort of that Alyssa had brought up with us with reputation and your brand's personality, another way that you can compete with Airbnb is with your hotel social media by making it kick ass. And we'll have more about making that on our next podcast, I believe. But you really need to be utilizing your social media as a hotelier to paint a picture for your potential guests of what it is like to be on your property. So a great place to get content ideas for when you're looking at what you need to post, what is important, what is unique about your property is to check your reviews.
So your guest might call things out to you that you wouldn't have thought about on a daily basis. If there are gorgeous sunrise views from like a certain section of your balconies, if there is a like a free omelet bar every morning that people really love, if your pool turns into this like crazy like sunset oasis every evening, those are the kinds of things that guests will call out in their reviews. And you can put that on your socials. Put the review up there, say, you know, so-and-so said 5 stars because look at this view, and show them the view. You don't have to have people just taking your word for it or just looking at the stylized shoots that you have, you know, like in the gallery tab on your hotel website. You have real life photos that are paired with real life experiences from real life guests. And, you know, that goes a lot farther, I would say, than, you know, like the glamour shots that are on a hotel gallery. Because I would say, you know, there's a statistic, we'll have it linked like in the show notes, but the statistics are showing that while less than 50% of guests might leave a review, more than 90% of them are reading reviews before they book a stay. So you need to definitely be capitalizing on those, monitoring them, and making sure that you're working within your best, you know, putting your best face forward, property's best face forward with that one. That's what I've got.
Yeah, I think this, you know, while it's like a bonus little tip, I think it really does belong, you know, as one of the fundamental things you can do. Vacation rental properties really can't do that. I mean, you have tools as a hotelier, such as Flip2, or literally such as the on-site staff that can go get pictures on an ongoing basis. You can create that vibe of the property's alive, things are happening. This is what this person's saying, and this person's saying, and it's not so static and stale. You have that ability to be in the now. That does put a hotel, I think, at a competitive advantage from a social perspective, because it's going to be hard to do. Airbnb or VRBO or whomever can definitely have a great social presence, but it's going to be a social presence that is vacation centric or city centric. It's not necessarily going to be, this is what's happening right now at the bar. Here's our signature cocktail. It's amazing. Book your stay.
Right. Because I would say a lot of times with an Airbnb, of course, the host or whoever is running the socials, they're not going to be there during a guest stay, hopefully. You know, they're like, oh, you know, look at this. Yeah. Look at this amazing outdoor shower. And it's like, please don't look at the outdoor shower right now.
Well, you know, there's Airbnb properties don't even, that's not going to have a social account or following.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unless it's a huge, like, you know, huge, crazy Airbnb.
I don't know. Is that allowed? I feel like that would be against policy. I don't know.
I think it's allowed. I've seen, you know, like some super, super popular Airbnbs. I'm not sure where smaller properties would find the value in it. But for large properties, I've seen, I wish I could think of the name of it, but one is standing out in my memory. There's a gorgeous A-frame cabin that I'm thinking of that's an Airbnb. It's booked out until like 2050 or some nonsense like that. But they've got a gorgeous online presence because their property is gorgeous. It's all over Pinterest and things like that. But you know, for a smaller property, I'm not sure if.
Yeah, and I don't think that we're, you know, primarily your typical vacationer's not, that's not your guest that you're competing for in mass.
Right.
Yeah, that's going to be a one-off. I want
someone's having an experience.
Yeah, because once it's booked, that one's done.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I think, you know, from a hotel perspective, you're looking at, I have to fill X number of rooms, and I'm going to give each of those people the same amazing experience. So. But this is good stuff. Olivia, awesome job with this article. If anybody wants to read it, all they have to do is go to travelboommarketing.com/blog. And it is right there at the very top called How Does Airbnb Compete with Hotels? So I think that'll give you a lot of the information that you need. But definitely check out the show notes as well. Between the show notes and, you know, the article, I think that will give hoteliers really the tools they need and the strategies they can put in place to really compete as we kind of go into a nonstop changing vacation ecosystem that we're in. So I thought that was a good episode. Anything else that anybody wants to chime in on? Now is the time.
Hope everyone else also had a great Easter. Since we all had great Easters.
Yeah, we all had great Easters in the future and past. But well, perfect. Well, that's all we got for you today. Stay tuned for next week's episode. We've been putting out a ton of content, so you can check that on the blog or the podcast. We had a webinar that we did recently that you can watch as well. So stay tuned for a lot more content, a lot more research, just like the hotel study we just wrapped up. And while you're doing that, just do the best job you can, being the best hotelier you can be. And understand that, I guess, VRBO, Airbnb, those aren't necessarily enemies by any means. It's just a different product. And as a hotelier, we got to figure out how to best attract as many guests as we possibly can. All right. I think that's it. Well, with that being said, have a wonderful week. We'll see you next time. And Travel Boom is... Olivia, you can say it.
Travel Boom is out. I'm allergic to everything outside right now.